Good evening, everyone. It's good to see everybody here tonight. We're going to go ahead and get it started. I know we got some other people coming, but we can do some stuff at the very beginning and sort of get things rolling and sort of rev up the whole engine to this thing. So, Andy Williams says this is the most wonderful time of the year, right? And the whole song, if you listen to it, it's like a case. He's laying it out. Here's why, and it is definitive, and it is not to be questioned. And so he proclaims this proudly and loudly each and every Christmas season. And for many of us, that is true. But that's not always the case. But let's begin with the true part of that. And so I'd love for someone, maybe one or two people, to describe their best Christmas that they can remember in just a couple of minutes. Maybe the best Christmas.
My best Christmas was when my daughter was born on Christmas Day.
Oh.
In Newport, Rhode Island.
Wow.
At the Naval Hospital.
Okay.
And I was served Long Island roast duck.
Really?
Wow.
Wow. Hospitals were under different budgetary constraints back then. Wow. That's nice. That's nice. At the Naval Hospital. Okay. Okay. One other person, your best Christmas that you can remember. Your best holiday season. Or just a really good one. Yeah.
We were in a ski house in Vermont. Okay. We had a really nice ski home. There was another couple with us that hadn't had children yet. We had had our daughter. And she was about 2 years old. Well, we went out. Pete and I went out and we cut down this tree in the woods, and it was a real Charlie Brown tree. It was all scrungly.
Okay.
Decorated it.
Yeah.
And then we hoisted it up to the ceiling so our daughter couldn't pick
it. Oh, wow, okay.
So this
is a lot of engineering.
But it was the most memorable.
Okay, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But they're not all like that. Even some of our most beloved cartoons of this season have a fairly decent dramatic plot line, which means it's not always just bright and shiny and happy. There are struggles, there are challenges involved. And you see there, if we're looking at how we help those who hurt navigate the holidays, in each of these, you have the main character being consoled, being counseled by someone else, by a friend. Now, I would suggest to you that Hermie's a little more help to Rudolph, and Frosty's a little more help to Karen than Lucy is to Charlie Brown. I'm sure her counseling strategy and style is a fit for some people, but, you know, I would recommend Charlie Brown just move on. You know, he's given this enough time. It's time to move on. But regardless, so even these narratives, which we, I think, would put in the category of our joyous Christmas experiences, give witness to the fact that it's not always so great and shiny and wonderful. Have any of you had a hard Christmas or a difficult Christmas or holiday season? And might just give witness to that just a little bit. Yeah, Joyce.
The first one after my husband died was very difficult.
Okay. First one after the death of your husband. Sure. Sure. I think I saw your hand. Right? No? Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I'm just saying yes. After my mother died, unexpectedly, that Christmas was really hard.
After your mother died, unexpectedly. Okay, sure, sure. Anyone else?
I remember when my father was in the nursing home as a stroke patient.
Okay.
Bringing him home for holidays in a wheelchair, and Bill and I trying to manage him. And we had two tiny had a Christmas boy. I really didn't have it. It took quite a bit of doing.
Yeah.
Physical, emotional, and mental.
Right, right, because there was a whole lot going on about the expectation of it. You were in a strong bind of the sandwich generation, kind of at that point, where you that was tugging on you from both sides. So, so the holidays are not always easy. They're almost always stressful and challenging to one degree or another, and then sometimes they can be really just hard, and it's difficult to be. In that mood or place that we maybe want to be in, that may have some resonance with those best Christmas memories that we have, and those become the standards, and when we're not quite getting up to that, that differential becomes very apparent during this time. So let's talk a little bit about that here tonight. So the holiday blues, why we feel them, what we can do about them, and then how we can help others. And I think, you know, obviously the last question is more connected to the actual title here tonight. But I think to understand how to do that, you sort of have to understand what you're dealing with and maybe even how you can deal with these kinds of places. If you're going to be a helper to someone else, it begins at home and taking care of yourself. And if you understand how to do that, then maybe it becomes a little easier in trying to help someone else. So, holiday blues, why we feel them, some general holiday dynamics that can be challenging, stress-producing, even downright depressing. There are expectations of this season about one's mood. Andy Williams expects us to this to be the happiest season of all for us. We're good Southerners, so when we're asked how we're doing, we always say fine, of course, but that's not always true. But in the holiday season, there's sort of this, well, of course you're going to be fine. And so when you're not, once again, that difference is bothersome. There's a look that is to be achieved in terms of one's clothes or one's home, and that takes time and effort. It is a financial drain because those clothes and those decorations and, of course, the gifts put a financial drain on us that's not always true the rest of the season. Expectations around and engagement in, of course, activities. There is a ton of stuff to do. There are a ton of opportunities for us to be engaged in different things. We can experience some of that as expectation. An obligation. And so that takes time and energy. And even when we're not going to do a certain thing, if we sort of think we're supposed to be there, that sort of is sitting over here in our psyche, that oughtness, and becomes worrisome for us. It is a time of relationships, a lot of people, a lot of gathering. Some of those are close, some of those are more casual. All of those can be positive or maybe negative or draining, but even the positive ones take time and take investment. And you can be overloaded on good folk around you, right? And then there's other folks who can just be draining to you. And sometimes those are people who are close to you and are family members or friends. Sometimes it's just the person in front of you at Kohl's, you know? And that negativity can be contagious, right? Right? Seasonal affective disorder, who knows what that is? Anybody in here want to claim it?
Get a sun lamp, it works.
Get a sun lamp, it works. All right, seasonal affective disorder, for those of you who don't know, this is not just an Oprah disease, okay? It's not just something they talk about on the talk shows. This is in the DSM-5. As a diagnosis. And so, and interesting enough, it's not just winter. I learned that in my research here. There's some who have it actually over spring and summer. But like 80% of seasonal affective disorder is related to winter. It's generally related to the amount of light that you were experiencing. And without that light, it can depress your mood. Those people who are diagnosed with depression, 70% of them have a higher incident of that during the winter months, okay? So that does affect you. Whether this is connected can involve a lack of engagement. Not necessarily because of light, although if you don't get out after night, that can be a piece of it. But our friends farther north who are already snowed in, some of them, and this kind of thing, studies have shown that if you just get out of the house one time each day, and if you have some connection with another human being face to face, if it's just the person at the 7-Eleven, that can make a difference. And when you don't have that, this can be a challenge and can be a depressing factor in one's life. One way to combat that can be social media, especially if it's FaceTime, something where you're seeing the other person, okay? Next is a phone call. After that is a text conversation that might do you some good. Email and Facebook messaging doesn't tend to do folks much good, because it's not immediate, and there's no response back from someone in an immediate kind of way. And Facebook and Twitter can produce a sense of comparison. We always put our best self forward in Facebook, right? And on Twitter and Instagram. And so we see someone else, and they're doing super well, and they're doing great, and they're smiling, and they're happy, and, you know, and maybe we're not quite there. We might be doing okay, but when that other person's way up here, then all of a sudden we can feel less about who we are in our experience of the holiday season. So those are some general things. You add to that the rather ever-present dynamic of grief and loss in our life. And I think that's a helpful way to think of it. Is it episodic? Yes. But I would say at most any point in time in our life, we are being influenced by a sense of loss, of grief, of something going on in our world, okay? And of course, it doesn't go away during the Christmas season. So when you got all that other stuff working on you, then you have this that's always sort of there. The two combined can be quite powerful and can have a negative effect on us. There's all kinds of loss in our life. The idea of place. If one has lived in a certain place and one has moved, the loss of a house or a home, job and career, that can be a retirement or change, reassignment within that can be a loss. Financial loss of income, loss of physical or mental ability. But of course, most of the time we think about grief, we're thinking about relationships. So you could have those relationships that one has lost, experienced loss through death, through divorce, through estrangement, memory loss. If one has a loved one who is going through Alzheimer's, there's a loss there, a chronic illness, distance. The other person may be alive and well, but if you've just moved hundreds of miles away from them and they're not next door anymore, that, there's loss there involved. There's a grief over that. Perinatal death, in terms of miscarriage and death immediately after birth, broken friendships, etc. And of course, these can result in all the typical things you hear about grief in terms of sadness, of course, fatigue, can actually approach clinical depression. Guilt, if there is some sense of oughtness that's connected to that loss that you own, regret, well, it's not, I wasn't to blame, but I regret that this didn't happen. I regret that this didn't occur. We didn't do this. There certainly can be anger. If the loss of that dynamic or person is that person's fault, then there can be anger toward that person still, toward doctors or medical people who maybe not did enough in one's opinion, company or family that put pressure on that individual, friends, and then anger at God at a very God time of the year for us God folk. And so all of those can be a piece of it. Then there are the prompts, especially for relational grief during the holidays that come up. So you've got the stress of Christmas, the stress of grief that's always there, and then this can be a time when it's prompting. Of course, it's a time of family and friends, thus the absence is all the more noticeable. The empty chair is visible and stark in the room at this particular time. You mentioned after the death of your husband, if the loss has been within a year, this is the first holiday since. It's our first holiday without, kind of idea. Anniversary of loss, year, month, day. You were sharing part of the good thing was the fact that your daughter was born on Christmas Day. If the loss is connected to someone whose birthday, anniversary, you typically celebrated it together. My grandmother was born on Christmas Eve. So it was a big deal in our house that she got a cake on Christmas Eve. And Christmas Eve was her birthday. Jesus got Christmas Day. You know what I'm saying? All right. And then when that's grandma, that's the way it's going down. All right. So we think of her at this time. I had an older sister who died before I was born. She died at the age of 5. It's encephalitis. She was born on Thanksgiving. Every Thanksgiving Day afternoon, my mother and I would go out and to her grave and put flowers on her grave every Thanksgiving. So if you have some connection like that, I had a church member in Memphis whose spouse died on March 25th. Now, when you've buried as many people as I've buried, I don't remember when everybody dies or the funeral. I remember when this person died because that Christmas Eve, this person said to me, you know, tomorrow would have been 9 months. The next year, the person said to me, you know, tomorrow would be 1 year and 9 months. Wow. Because they died on the 25th. That was significant. Traditions associated with specific people. We always baked cookies with grandma. So when you're doing that tradition the next year and that person's not there, their absence is felt. Holiday biblical themes can amplify certain types of loss. Perinatal loss or the inability to have children. In this season when we are talking about birth narratives and miraculous birth narratives where God gets involved to enable birth to occur, people who have been there can feel that at this time of year. Divorce, marital discord, you know, the Holy Family is always painted in such idyllic light, you know, as if Mary and Joseph never fought, right? But we hear that, and if that's going on in our world, we feel it maybe more. Financial struggles, you know, those three wise men could bring some pretty fancy gifts. If you can't give gifts, all of these things can play into what's going on. Some of these before I alluded to, the idea of financial loss, if you've just lost your job or had a decrease in salary, you feel that at this time because of the extra expense. Job loss, I know a lot of people despise their Christmas parties, but I actually had a guy in my church in Memphis. It was like, it really set in that he was retired and wasn't going back when he couldn't go to the Christmas party. And then what happens when you go to the Christmas party and now you don't know all the jokes? And now you don't know all the people, right? Yeah. Moving, loss of home. We always went to Grandpa's house. We always went to the Christmas parade in Richmond. My cousins, my mother just died. My father is the last remaining. They were all raised in Hattiesburg of either their siblings who live in Hattiesburg. And so my cousins were saying, you know, when your dad dies, we won't have a reason to come back to Hattiesburg. Yeah. There's grief there. There's loss. Loss of mental and physical ability. We always took a hike on Christmas afternoon. If someone has lost their mobility and can't do that anymore, we always put together a puzzle with Aunt Susan. If all of a sudden mentally they can't do that anymore, you notice it. This is the season and the time when you're together and these things become apparent. Okay. In Dan's literature that you can find on our website about the Ministry of Care, it has this particular impact scale for change and stress events, adapted from Thomas Holmes. Notice Christmas itself makes the list. And it is equivalent to the loss of a pet. Now, for those of us who are pet lovers, that registers. Now, the rest of you are sitting there, it's like, well,
you know.
But that's too low, I'm telling you. My golden retrievers, that's too low. All right, but here's what I want to say, suggest to you. Except for maybe about 7 or 8 of these, the awareness of this situation and the depth in which you feel it is amplified by Christmas or the holidays. The death of anyone is no longer at the table. The financial loss is there. The relational issues of divorce, marriage, arguing, and separation, all of a sudden those are apparent because you're having to deal with that right now. Trouble with in-laws, that goes without saying. That's going to get amplified, right? So do you understand how all these interplay together and they sort of amplify one another? And so those stress factors become more, and these can all be at the root of why this can be a hard season for many people. All right. Holiday blues, what we can do about them. And this, of course, what I'm going to lay out with you today is it's not any sort of conclusive, certainly not all-inclusive list. But from my reading, I gathered a bunch of sources, especially things that if they appeared in more than one or they appeared in every list, those were the kind of things I took real note of. The first thing is if you are at a place where you are experiencing some grief and some loss in your life, is to acknowledge that the holidays are going to be different and the dimensions of it are probably going to be hard. Don't just, you know, casually waltz into it with the expectation that things won't be different. There's going to be something different about this. And so go into it with a sense of awareness. Give yourself permission to grieve as you need to do so, including crying. Now, that goes without saying, I hope, among this group of good folk. But that can be, even if you think it's okay to cry other times, if you're with your family on Christmas and everybody's happy and they're running around and, you know, but it's okay. And we need to give ourselves permission to do that. At the same time, acknowledge the dimension of the holidays can and will be joyous. Don't miss those moments along the way. You honor your loved one in experiencing those. Try to see it through that kind of light as well. So even as you are aware that things might be hard, don't make it necessarily a self-fulfilling prophecy for yourself. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. You can get so prepared, but all of a sudden that's all you're seeing and all you're experiencing. And you're seeing the totality through that lens. So do be proactive as best you can. Plan for what you want and need ahead of time. This is one of the things that was really stressed. Decide where you want to spend, who you want to be with, what traditions you want to keep or change, what new ones you want to start. Plan for the balance of activities, being with people and the time that you need alone. That's what the pictures are about. If you're an extroverted person, you're probably going to want more of this and less of this. If you're an introvert, you're going to want more of this and less of that. But you're probably going to need both in some amounts. And so plan to give yourself both of that. Spend the bulk of the time around those people who help you feel better and less around those who stress you out. That's sort of general. Everybody can just take that. All right? That's my gift to you right there. This season, spend time around the people that bless you and less time around those who stress you out. Consider simplifying if needed, cater meals, eat out less decorating, presents, cards, activities. Accept the help of others in this task who can be good and respectful guides. Maybe you don't know what it really means for you. And maybe in your confusion over your present state of loss, you may need some help. Ask for it and say, can you help me think about what I might be needing here? Share and discuss your plan with family and friends ahead of time. Be flexible in implementing this. Change it if you need to. Have a plan A, plan B if you want. It's your plan. Okay. So, be okay with saying no, of course. This goes with that kind of making decisions. And even when you say yes, have an out. A plan A, plan B for specific events. This was something that was reiterated in almost every list. And they talked about parties and engagements. And you may want to go, feel like you need to go. You go, but realize maybe this could be a time when this could be hard for you. All right? So some of them say, number one, drive your own car. In the day of Uber, you're probably covered. All right? On that. Maybe have a friend who can leave with you. Tell the host, listen, I'm coming, but I might have to slip out. But have an out, even if those things you say yes to. The next thing might have been the thing most mentioned in the list. Find a way to externalize, formalize, honor your grief in, shall we say, incarnational ways, tangible ways. Remember your loved one in a special way. A memory box or stocking was an idea where you allow people in the family to write down their favorite memory, put it in the box or stocking. On Christmas Day, when everybody else is getting those, you can at some point pull it out and read those favorite memories of that particular person. Light a candle, the empty chair. Some people keep that at the table. Makes the favorite dish or music or tradition of the person, observe those. Give special items of loved ones to those who would appreciate them. Giving grandchildren something from grandmother or grandfather can be a powerful thing. Donate money, items, times to a charity of the loved one's choice. Put out pictures. Have a specific storytelling time. Visit the gravesite together. Other creative ideas. One of my favorites that I read was a family that had a loved one, and she died, and she loved reading, and she loved books. She was actually a literature teacher. And so on Christmas Day afternoon, or maybe the next day, depending on when it's open, they would go to Barnes & Noble, and they would buy like $200, $250 worth of gift cards in $10 increments. And then they spread out through the bookstore, and they would just stash them in books that their loved one loved, so that whoever came and bought that book would find the card, and they would, you know, and they'd write something on it, Merry Christmas, from the name of their loved one on that card, which I think is awesome. So if something ever happens to me, go to my library, find books, or go get Spotify gift cards and go to like a school for the arts and just hand them out to kids. Apple Music or something like that. I would love that. It would make me happy from heaven. Some counseling articles discuss skipping the holidays as one strategy. Other articles suggest doing so wholesale is not such a good idea. My personal take on that is I think when you're already dealing with change, to wholesale change some other big thing in your life might not be the best time. At the same time, give yourself permission to try something new and create new traditions. This was something, integrate travel into your plan, celebrate the holidays in a new place. Let's say if you've always celebrated holidays at this one place and one home, you might celebrate at someone else's this year. One of the stories wrote about how a group of family went and did something. You mentioned a cabin. They went and did something at a state park. So that first year, let's do it here. Let's find a different place. There was one person who wrote about travel that first several years after the death of a spouse, they sort of did the Christmas thing from about like the 22nd to the 25th, and then they had a plane ticket the next 3 years on like the 26th, and they went by themselves or maybe with a friend, and they experienced New Year's in a new place because they needed that time. They tended to the time they needed to be with people as well as away from people. Ask for help when needed. Say yes if it's offered. Friends, family, counseling, grief groups, Starlight Service, December 18th, 2 weeks from tonight. Yea, verily, in the chapel, correct? Not here, in the chapel, the 18th. Practice good self-care. Watch the food, watch the alcohol, sleep, rest, exercise, prayer, meditation. Remember that not everyone will be grieving the same way you are. And it is not to negate the way you need to deal with your grief. do realize there will be other people grieving there as well, most likely, and they may be going through it in a little different way and be at a little different place. All right. How can we help others then? Be sensitive to mood changes in others. Remember recent deaths and other losses of those around you. I do think there's a very real sense in which the time distance from a particular loss, especially at the holidays, does not matter. You know, we talked about anniversary. You know, it may be, you know, 7 2/3 year. You know, but in this year, it matters for someone, okay? But especially those who have had recent losses, for whom this is the first Christmas without someone or without a particular dynamic in their life. Do not hesitate to express sympathy for the loss, stating the person's name. I want to share with you a couple of things. One was posted by Randy Ashcraft. A lot of y'all know Ann and knew Ann and know Randy and about the significance of that loss. And I'd seen this before, but he just recently put this up on Facebook. If you know someone who has lost a very important person and you're afraid to mention them because you think you might make them sad by reminding them that they died, you're not reminding them. They didn't forget they died. What you're reminding them of is that you remembered that they lived. And that is a great gift. That was from Elizabeth Edwards, who I believe was the wife of John Edwards, the politician. And they had lost a child. This is another piece. Hardy Clemens, pastor, and had a family in his church that lost a teenage daughter in a tragic accident. And this was something that the father wrote and circulated amongst fellow friends and church members a little bit later on. The time of concern is over. No longer am I asked how my wife is doing. Oh, this is the wife. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess it's the wife of this man. I'm sorry. I thought it was the daughter. Forgive me. Time of concern is over. No longer am I asked how my wife is doing. No, I'm sorry. Let me back this up. It is the daughter. I guess the wife must have been absent in some way. Okay. Sorry, let me start. The time of concern is over. No longer am I asked how my wife is doing. Too seldom is the name of our daughter mentioned to me. A curtain descends. The moment has passed. A life slips from frequent recall. There are exceptions, close and compassionate friends, sensitive and loving family, Blair's closest pals. For most, the drama is over. The spotlight is off. Applause is silent. But for me, the play will never end. The effects on me are timeless. Say Blair to me. On the stage of my life, she will always be a rising star. Do not tiptoe around the most consuming event in my life. Love does not die. Her name is written on my life. Say Blair to me and say Blair again and again. It hurts to bury her memory in silence, and I will not. So long as we are here, please say Blair to us. So if there's some part of you that fears broaching the subject, the people who have been there and counselors will say, don't fear that. That's a way that you honor and you generally help the person who is going through this. Inquire with them about holiday plans. This may help them begin to think about it instead of stumble into it. And maybe you can help them with that if they seem overwhelmed. If you do that, do not impose your own needs or preferences on them. Don't assume that what you need is what they need. And I think I may have overlooked this a little while ago. I must have overlooked this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it here. So there was something. Oh, right. Oh, it was here. But also talk to them about other things as well. Okay? That loss is not the totality of who they are. Right? So with my father, just recently, this past week. And so Sunday morning came, and, you know, I brought some decent clothes to wear to church. Had to pack light, but had some things there. And so we hadn't talked about it. I got in late Saturday. I didn't know if we were going to church the next day. So I go in, and he's not really ready, but it's still sort of early. And I'm like, Dad, do you want to go to church? And he's like, well, it's sort of late. And then he looked at the clock. No, I guess we could go. And then he looked at me, and he said, you know, says I go, and everybody just sits there, how are you, Charlie? And how is this, and how is that, and, you know? And, and so for him, he appreciates that. But he also would love for someone just to talk to him about the Southern Miss football game, too. Does that make sense? You know? And so begin talk to them about other things as well. All right, be alert to signs of depression and broach that topic if such is the case. Be quick to refer to a professional if that is the case. One myth that is probably out there that you may be, is actually that suicide attempts and such go up in the holidays. They do not. Interestingly, if there's any statistical numbers there, they may go down slightly. The season after the holidays, January, February, can be problematic or problematic. That isn't to say you shouldn't be alert to those kinds of cues, okay? But certainly for depression, be aware and refer. Offer to be a resource person through the holidays. This idea of saying, I know this may be difficult, this may be a hard season, I just want to be here for you. Now, I know that's a busy season for you, it's a busy season for them, but it's generally only 4 weeks. Advent's 4 weeks. Throw in Thanksgiving, you got six, right? It's not a long time. And if they need somebody to go do something with them, if they need to go somewhere, need to talk to somebody, make yourself available, maybe set in a regular check-in kind of time, like say, if I don't hear from you, I'm just going to call you every Sunday afternoon. If you want to talk, just tell me I don't want to talk. You interrupt my dad watching the Saints game, you might get that. But you're just checking in a regular way and being available and accessible to them. And they know that you're there in connection with that purpose. Don't underestimate the power of tangible gifts. I really am a very green person. I'm not a stuff person. I don't like stuff. And giving stuff that you got to do stuff with and all that. That being said, yes, some people take a card and it's in the trash can or recycle bin right away, right? It's other people, they put it on the counter. They put it on the dresser. They put it on the refrigerator. And they see it. Or the flower. Or the small trinket. That tangibleness can be powerful. Pray for them, of course. Invite them into your traditions or events related, unrelated to the holidays. Again, a tree, concerts, games, movies, tacky house tours, whatever that is, if you're of a mindset to do that, even errands to the grocery store. Be sensitive, though, and don't overdo or impose yourself. In a way, some of this tangibleness and this is in lieu of that. If you've already contacted them, said, I'm going to be here for you in connection with this, you maybe don't have to do this. But if you haven't done that and you're just like, hey, we're going to go do this, would you like to come along? That can be a powerful thing. So that's what I've got, and I laid a lot on you. What questions and other suggestions do you have from your experience? I love what Daniel says, is that David Cassidy has taught us the experts are always in the room. Mm-hmm. So what thoughts, questions, comments, additions do y'all have? Go ahead, Paul. We'll get.
I was just going to say, I like the thought of talking about the person, bringing the name into the conversation.
Yeah.
And like my grandkids would always, with Jane, do the baking and that sort of thing. And I don't think we've talked about that. So when I go to Texas, that's going to be a wonderful thing to do. And even have the extra stocking, something that the person still, but love never dies.
Yes, it is. Correct. Absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Bert?
Years ago, I was pastoring a rural church that had a cemetery behind the church. There was a family in the congregation that lost their 12-year-old son in an ATV accident, not far from the church. It was a terrible, terrible situation. For months after the death of that son, the father, every Sunday when he'd come to church, the first thing he did, get out of his car after he parked it, he'd walk back up to the cemetery where his son was buried, and he'd spend some time in the cemetery. And I had a couple of men in the church came to me one Sunday and said, well, when is he going to get over that? You know, he's going up there every Sunday and spending time with they were so uncomfortable with his grief. And I thought of some nice ways to tell them that they really needed to back off and let him have that. Basically what I said was, we all experience our grief in a different way. We all deal with it in a different way. I said, if that's helpful to him, that's healthy. I know you're uncomfortable with it, but it's helping him. And they kind of got it after that. And they at least stopped saying anything to me about it. And after a few months, the father got so every Sunday he didn't feel the need to go to the church cemetery and spend time in his son's grave. Not every Sunday. So that's just a long way of saying everybody's got their own course for grief. And if you're uncomfortable with it, maybe we ought to think about why we're uncomfortable, not why they're doing what they're doing. So why does it bother me so much? Maybe I'm the one who's got the issue, not Brian.
Good point.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
David, I have a question.
Yes, Judy.
Since you had the recent loss of your mom, how is this for you to do this? Was this helpful? What part of this was helpful for you?
Well, you heard me intertwine some stories there. I mean, it was like there's some things I'm reading along. It's like, yep, I just saw that, you know. I just experienced that. And so I think it's very fresh. And it'll be very interesting. It's sort of interesting. I think for many of us, we're still sort of in still just the blur of the death and the grief and all the handling of all the business and all the stuff. So Thanksgiving was still a piece of that, but Christmas will be different. It'll be markedly different. And so I guess I have thought about ways of remembering Mom. I'll even tell you one little story. So we brought home, my mother, my mom was one of these highly industrious people. So my mom never really retired. She just shifted her jobs. I mean, within a week of retirement, she was already volunteering at the hospital. And she just took no time off. And she would care for people in nursing homes, assisted living facilities. She did that. And she would visit them. And she would spend untold hours going to the dollar store and the bookmarks and the magnets and the vases in which she would put flowers, and she would take, and she would have cards. And she would do that. So we had all the flowers. Well, we asked for no flowers but donations, but you know how that goes. And so we had a considerable number of flowers. And, Leanne and I wanted, and we were like, we're going to break up all those flowers, and and we're going to put them in smaller vases, and we're going to the assisted living nursing home facility where mom was, and we're going to pass them out. But my dad and my sister-in-law and some others got to them first, and they just took them wholesale over there, and we were like, So I've thought about, that's a long story, simply say, I want to do something like that. I want to engage in an activity that she would be engaging in where she's still living.
Thanks for sharing.
That's
probably
fresh.
Others?
Anyone
else?
I noticed something that I guess I should have noticed a long time ago, and that is people who live in retirement homes, of which we've just gone into, are very lonesome. Now, Tucky and I are not, but every time I get on a bus out there to go to a different building, somebody reaches over and grabs my red gray hair and says, "You remind me of my son." They want to talk.
Yeah.
And so Tucky knows I'm not bashful. I'll talk to anybody. But what I'm saying to everybody in here, go to a home like that and talk to me. Just let them share with you what's on their mind. And they'll let you know, believe me. And it's been really rewarding for me to be around that, to see what these people have and what they've been missing without a lot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's almost like you almost could begin a conversation. It's not, are you grieving something, but what are you grieving?
What are you grieving? Absolutely.
You know? And there's probably, you know, different times in our life we're feeling that with different levels of intensity, but it's sort of a common factor of our existence.
Yeah. Can I request that you get Cassandra or somebody to put your slides up on the website?
Okay. Sure.
The whole thing?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
She wants the card.
You are.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'm a quick study. Every once in a while. Anyone else?
David, I think you've got to measure how far you can go with the person, too. I think, you know, I've seen it done where it hurts a person. And I think you really got to.
Yeah.
Be aware of how far you go.
Right, right. Yeah, just like we talked about the idea of self-care and the plan, it's different for everyone. You know, Bert talked about with the gentleman he was talking about, you know, that was a very meaningful part of that person's grief experience. Mm-hmm. It would be totally wrong to impose that on someone else. You know, it would have been wrong to impose that on the guys who were asking Bert about it, right? Just like it was sort of out of line for them to be, what's he doing out there? You know? You do, Joe, have to be very sensitive to how the individual is experiencing this and their desire about how they want to work through it. My dad will sit there and talk about my mom, and sometimes he'll tear up and that kind of thing, and then he's ready to talk about the Saints game. And there's both and for him. And if all you want to do is talk about mom, he's going to reach a point where he's, if all you want to talk about the Saints, and ignore it. Yeah. We're all different. We all need that balance.
David.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, too, people are very solicitous shortly after a grieving event, and they will talk to you and they'll ask you how you are, and then a little time goes by and you're still grieving, but it helps if they will just say, how are you doing?
Sure. Yeah.
How are you doing? You know, it doesn't go away immediately. You just need that little extra.
Sure. And to be sensitive to that and sensitive to those around us, and I might just throw in a plug that, you know, that ongoing ministry after that occurs is the heart of the student ministry. So that's a part of that good work. Okay. Well, yes, huh?
By the same token, something we haven't mentioned, I have a good friend in another city, and my layman's evaluation is, I think she is at a stuck place in her brain.
Ah, okay.
She cared for her husband as a nurse, as lovingly as anyone could have, and she is still reliving the last months of it. What could I have done to have made him live longer? This has gone on for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm patiently listening. But I'm not really helping her.
Right,
I'm not politically correct.
Yeah.
I'm not
putting
it.
Yeah.
But there needs to be another step that she's...
Right. Well, and so persistent grief disorder is also a DSM category. So there certainly is a place and a time probably for people to receive some counseling and some grief work. I believe it's... I should have written this down, but I just recently, with Andy McAllister and his daughters, is it Full Circle? But there is actually a counseling practice here in Richmond, and they have like 9 counselors on staff. They are grief counselors. They are grief counselors. That's what they do. There's probably a time and a place where maybe that's the... If you can, help a person, because people do get stuck. They do get stuck. All right. Well.
Thank you.
Thank y'all. Well, let's pray and we'll be dismissed. Good and gracious God of all hope and all healing, you who are here for us, you who came to be with us in all that we are dealing with, in the midst of all of our grief and all of our loss and all of our joy and celebration too, our sense and our need to move forward even as we carry with us these precious memories. So I pray your blessing upon these who have gathered. I pray your blessing upon them as they face the challenges of their own grief. I pray your blessing upon them as they seek to be your children for the living of this day, as they seek to offer your grace and your love and mercy and wholeness and healing to those who are hurting around them, especially now. We thank you for the opportunity we have to love you and to love one another, and we pray that you'd help us do it well. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Amen.